You're listening to the West End Frame Show.
Hello and welcome to our special end of year episode of the West End Frame Show. It's the last episode of the series and the last episode of the year. And whilst 2020 has been hell, today is all about celebrating all of the incredible things that have happened this year in our industry. I'm your host and West End Frame editor, Andrew Tomlins. And to keep me on the straight and narrow, I'm joined by an incredible theatre journalist who has kept herself busy this year with lots of online shows and even the odd press night. She writes for Broadway World UK and she's a regular voice on this podcast. You know her. So welcome back to the West End Frame Show, Kaz Cronin.
Hello!
Did you have a lovely Christmas? What did Santa bring you?
Had a lovely Christmas. Always do. And I refuse to let this year's drama ruin it. So... yes, it was wonderful.
We should fess up that this is a sneaky little pre-record. So that was excellent acting from Kaz that you just...
It's the best acting I've ever put out there. Which wouldn't be hard because I'm
maybe the
actress.
Only, yeah, maybe the only actor you ever put out there.
And the world is best keeping it that way, trust me.
We are sadly recording this on the first day of London being in Tier 3, so... we're going to do our best to keep it positive and to celebrate the wonderful things that have happened, but it's hard not to feel a little bit sad, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Tell me about, before we dive in, you went to press night of A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
What was, and I was going to see it, and then obviously I now was unable to see it. So what was that press night like, and what was the show like?
Well, I mean... press nights are always, you know, you have a great atmosphere. There's always a good buzz. And I think at first, obviously, everything felt, you know, a lot more tame because obviously you can't have people gathering in the lobby and drinking and chatting. And that's normally, you know, that's part of it. But, you know, we all had staggered entry. I had to arrive by 10 past six and the show started at seven. So, you know, they're very well organized. You know, it's a one-way system. You're straight in, up the stairs, no milling around. And it was very impressive. But actually, you know, once you got in your seats that were, you know, very significantly distanced, I was pleased to see, you know, once you were sat down and once the orchestra started up, it just erupted. Even the pre-show instructions, you know, leave your, you know, your phones, put your phones away, etc., voiced by the lovely Brian Connolly. Just people just went crazy at that. Screaming, clapping, banging the floor. It was incredible. The show itself, so well done, given that it's, you know, not a fully staged production. And A Christmas Carol, you know, it's trying to evoke the sense of Victorian London's quite hard when you don't, you haven't really got anything to play with, but they did an incredible job. And yeah, the atmosphere was just nuts.
It was literally it was the day that it was announced that we were going to Tier 3 and they had press like that night, two shows the next day, and then that was it.
Yeah.
And didn't Brian Connolly do an amazing speech at the end?
He did, yeah, at curtain call. He did. It was kind of a kind of this really sentimental speech mashed up with this kind of like comedy act. He's just so naturally hilarious. So he was essentially just saying, and I'm sure a lot of people will have seen the clip because I know it's online, you know, talking about how the creative team, you know, put this show on not to make loads of money, just to say, look, we've got to do something. We've got to occupy ourselves. We've got to keep people in work. We've got to entertain the masses if we can. And it was just, it was so heartbreaking. And his voice was breaking as he was saying it. And then, of course, he did his classic Brian Connolly gags about how he'd only just bought a kettle for his for his dressing room that day. And what was the point? And all this stuff. So it was bittersweet. I know that's a word that's used a lot, but it was. But it did feel really special to be there.
Well, it feels very fitting to be ending my podcasting year with you on Zoom because you were my first Zoom co-host. I was so scared that day. Yeah, you kicked off. You were my first. When we went into lockdown and we started series three eventually, you were my first person.
I don't think I knew
victim.
I was your first. I feel very honoured.
I can remember I did a very emotional speech at the start about...
Oh, I've obviously blocked it. That was a long time ago, Andrew. I've moved on.
It was, but... I was about to say something really sentimental, but maybe now it's not going to be as powerful. But I remember us saying... I remember, because I was in the room. I remember us saying how... Well, I didn't know what's going to happen and if I was going to be able to continue doing this because there's nothing happening. But as soon as I watched one or two digital things and stream things, I realized that it was going to be theatre that was going to get me through this period, like it does every other period of my life. Mm. And I remember you saying the same. And now at the end of 2020, it's been hell, it's been horrible, but I guess you probably are the same as me. Theatre has got me here in a different way to normal.
Yeah, for sure. And not just the theatre itself, but I just think the community.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even just watching the stream shows. It's just being in touch with, you know, whether it's friends or acquaintances that you know, we've built up over the years in this community. It's just, it kind of breaks your heart in the best and worst way, if that makes sense. Talking
totally.
To people, and, you know, I consider myself to be part of this community, but, you know, my livelihood doesn't depend on it. And if I feel the way I feel about what's going on, I just, you know, you have to times it by about a billion for everybody out there that, you know, it's their livelihood, it's everything, you know.
You said last time you cried more when theatres closed compared to when you got made redundant a few days prior.
Yeah, I mean, that was not even that much of an exaggeration. I think for me, it all came at the same time. So it was a double blow for sure. Trying to separate the two, the grief of the two. Actually, I couldn't. It was all tied up in the same thing, you know, losing a sense of identity in my losing my own job, but then losing my solace and my go-to, you know, the place that I go to unwind or to be my therapy. I lost both at the same time. So yeah, it was not great, was it? For everybody, and it's still not great.
No, I know. And I'm just devastated that we haven't had a Nando's together.
I know, me too. That's obviously
months,
yeah, that's,
maybe years
that's,
now.
Cried more about that, Andrew, than about anything else. I have had several Nando's without you, though, so don't you worry about that.
Same. Me too. I've got some peri-peri salt in my kitchen, actually. I might have that later. And you've got a big glass of wine, which I like to see. I've just had some Prosecco, so don't worry, I'm with you.
Good man.
So this is how it's going to work. Coming up on today's show, both myself and Kaz will be revealing our top 5 shows of 2020. We have no idea what the other person has chosen, so I'm very intrigued to see if there's any overlaps, if you agree at all. I can't wait. And we'll be sharing some of your theatrical highlights too and answering some of your questions. Okay. So, first up, Kaz is going to reveal her top five theatrical highlights of 2020. How have you found this? Was it easy or terrible?
At first I thought it was easy, and then when I actually started going through everything and remembering how much I've actually seen, it then suddenly became very, very hard. And then you dropped on me 5 minutes ago that I had to reveal it in descending order. So now I've had to put them into some kind of order, which is the most stressful part, but I've done it.
So, number five.
Number five is what I think was the first streamed piece of theatre that I watched, and it was Flowers for Mrs. Harris.
Good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this was a show that I actually hadn't heard that much about, and I've not actually ever been to Chichester, sadly. And there was quite a lot of buzz about it when they released that, when, you know, it was announced that they were going to release this. So many people online have said that they'd seen it, and it was so brilliant, and I thought, right, well, this is it, I've got to see it. And it was incredible. I was blown away by it, and I think because I had no expectations, because I didn't know that much about it, it was all the more impactful.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that was a show that really surprised me, and one that I recommended on here, and then I had quite a lot of messages afterwards, people saying thank you for the recommendation, and they went on to watch it, and it had some really great buzz. I would love to see that when theatres reopen. And you can now, I believe, the cast album's available. So
yeah,
you can't stream it anymore, but you can check out the album. That's a good one. Yeah. Number four.
Oh, you're getting through these very rapidly. Okay. So my number four is the NT Live series of free streaming that they did was obviously, you know, very well received. And I tuned into 12th Night, the gender fluid production with Tamsin Greg. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't, sadly.
It was incredible. So I am a big Tamsin Greg. I never know how to say her name. Greg? Anyway, you all know who I mean. She's incredible. I've loved her in everything she's ever done. You know, sitcoms, movies, the lot. And 12th Night is also my favourite Shakespeare play. So for me, this was just a very happy marriage. And then, you know, add on top of that, this kind of gender fluid element where Malvolio became Malvolia. It was just really interesting because the whole play is about identity and then creating a cast that has these, you know, some of the characters become then gender fluid or interchangeable. It just made that whole topic of identity so much more prominent. I absolutely loved it. And I just wish I'd seen it in person. Really wish I had. But it's essentially a rom-com, 12th Night, 17th century rom-com. And I love me a rom-com, Andrew, I do. And it was really well done. So that's my number four.
And your revelation was last time that you had never been to the National Theatre.
Correct.
But am I right in thinking that that has now changed?
That has been rectified. And you'll see this when I come to my number two.
We'll talk about you losing your national virginity later. God, that sounds so bad.
Sorry.
But potentially the National Theatre is launching its online streaming service, so potentially if people like me who missed this production, maybe we can go and stream it. Who knows. Okay, number three
is First Date, Simon Lipkin and
another one I missed.
Oh, Andrew, you're terrible. What kind of stagey do you call yourself for missing these?
I'm a fraud.
So that was, you know, relatively recently. I think that was October, if memory serves. And so First Date, I'd heard about it when it was on Broadway because I love Zachary Levi so much. I love him. I became obsessed with him when I saw a streamed version of She Loves Me from Roundabout Theatre, I think that was, in New York. And so when First Date was released on Broadway, I didn't go and see it because you can't just nip across the Atlantic very easily. But it was, you know, I was aware of it. So when it was announced that, you know, there'd be a production over here and Simon and Samantha, big fans of both of them, I thought, well, this has absolutely got to be seen. And what was really interesting about that is the way in which it was filmed. It was kind of this hybrid of, it wasn't, you know, performed in a theatre and then streamed like Flowers for Mrs. Harris. And it wasn't performed in an empty theatre like did you see Before After with Hadley Fraser and Rosalie Craig, where they performed it in a theatre? Oh,
no.
Well, why? I should be running this podcast, Andrew.
I'm fired.
You are fired.
Well, I hope you've seen all of my top five. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair.
And you've never been to the National Theatre, so let's even get started. This is war.
That is fair.
Chichester.
So I know. Okay. I retract everything I have said to you negatively. I love you.
Love you too.
But yeah, so, you know, it wasn't a Flowers for Mrs. Harris type production. It wasn't Before After. So Hadley and Rosalie basically performed it in, I think, I can't even remember what theatre it was. It's terrible of me, but they performed it, just stood up on, you know, still on book and then streamed out. Whereas this was kind of a combination. I think it was filmed at Crazy Cox, kind of part in Crazy Cox, part out on the street. They broke the fourth wall a few times. So it felt like it's really interesting. Theatre, TV, film, hybrid. It was just very different, the way in which they did it, which I really liked. And just as a concept, I liked the narrative. And it was performed brilliantly, of course, as you would expect from those two.
Yeah, amazing team. Oh, I really hope we get a live production at some point so we can see a proper run of it. That'd be amazing.
I would love that. Yeah.
So now we're on to the final two, the big two.
Number two. Well, Andrew, I finally went to the National Theatre, didn't I?
Yay!
So after our conversation and several other conversations I've had with people around the travesty of me having not been, when the National announced that their first live in-person production back would be Delroy, Death of England. I thought, right, well, if I'm going to see anything at the National at all, it's going to be the first production after the first lockdown. I don't care what it is. I didn't really, to be honest, know much about the play. I didn't know. I knew that at the time, Giles Torrero was meant to be performing in it, who I'm familiar with from Hamilton. So I thought, brilliant. But to be honest, I booked. I thought, I don't care what this is. I'm going. And then there was, you know, the drama around poor Giles having to have an operation, and then his understudy, Michael, having to step in. So there's a lot of drama going on around it. And then I ended up watching it on October the 30th, which was a few days before the second lockdown. So I got in there just in time. And it was, I guess it's my number two, partly because it was my first national experience. And I, what was interesting was that I was talking to some people when I was there from a distance, people who had been there, you know, they're regulars, and they're explaining to me how the COVID adaptation, how they'd adapted it for COVID. I had no concept of this, because I've not been in the Olivier Theatre before. And it was really interesting. They were explaining to me what they'd done. So just experiencing that and being one of the first people to see that was, felt like a real honour. And then the play itself was, it was next level. It was very intense, this kind of commentary on social injustice, but, you know, a one man play for just, I think it was just straight through 90 minutes. Yeah. Just, I mean, I don't know how we did it. He was fantastic. And it was quite, the whole thing was quite emotional for so
many. He'd really made it his own. There's a lot of commentary from creatives and all different people saying how he had made it his own since taking over. And I could see that. I could imagine Giles bringing something different to the table and doing his own thing with it. And I thought that was so remarkable to see that he'd literally taken over this role with such short notice and then just taken full ownership of this piece and delivered one of the most outstanding performances.
Unbelievable. And it felt really personal as well. I think Michael, I don't know how you pronounce his surname, which is terrible of me. Balogun. Obviously, he's been very vocal about his story and his background, that he was in Brixton prison. And so, you know, it feels like he probably had a lot of personal links to this kind of, he would have experienced this stuff in his life. And he's coming at it from a very different angle to, you know, to Giles's kind of experiences. So, yeah, it was pretty mind-blowing.
And it's back at the National next year. So it's going to sell out in a hot cake. So yeah, 100%. Like a hot cake. So everyone needs to go and see it.
Yeah, get booking, people.
Okay, I'm so intrigued. Number one. Give me a clue.
Ooh. Give you a clue. Okay, that's really hard.
I want to see if I can guess.
Okay, let me think. Jamie?
It was not everyone's talking about Jamie.
No. Not seen that. Fun fact. Have not Jamie. Seen that. Kathy.
Oh, Last 5 Years.
Yes. And I've cheated because I've seen it twice, once online and once in person throughout this last few months. So they're both my number one. Because Jason Robert Brown, love him, adore him, obsessed with him, but had never seen The Last 5 Years. I'd seen Jason Robert Brown perform some of the score at his concerts. I've been to a couple, but never seen it. So when the Lambert Jackson production was announced with Lauren Samuels and Danny Becker, I thought, fantastic. Okay, this is a chance for me to kind of see it be performed. And obviously that was really interestingly done. It was, you know, that they did it completely separately in isolation.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, I had nothing to compare it to, sure, but it didn't take away from it. It was just, you know, viewing everything through this really unusual lens.
Wow, what an incredible... So I've seen so many different productions over the years and I watched that one, but I'm thinking for you of what an amazing introduction to the show to see it in this unique way.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd never seen it staged any other way than two people in their, you know, their living rooms, essentially. Wow. So that felt, you know, kind of quite special in many ways, quite, you know, overwhelming. I loved it. And then obviously lockdown ended and Southwark Playhouse managed to resume their production with Molly Lynch and Ollie Higginson. I'd never seen either of those actors in anything else before, but I thought, right, okay, Southwark Playhouse, my favourite fringe theatre fact. So off I went. And that is an actor muso production. So again, quite an untraditional way of staging it. So I've never seen Last 5 Years staged in a, you know, quote unquote normal way.
Yeah.
And seeing it in person was just, I mean, apart from the fact that God bless Southwark Playhouse did amazing COVID precautions, but because I was there on my own, I was stuck in between two bits of perspex and the seats are so narrow. I thought, I'm not a big person. I'm not gonna be able to fit in here. So I was stuck in between the perspex, sweating quite a bit. Luckily I had a wine.
Of course you did.
I had a wine, had a couple of wines, and but as
you
soon
need
as,
it with that show.
Well, yeah, but you know, it was had this actor muso production. I reviewed it for Broadway World UK, and I genuinely can't imagine ever seeing it in any other way now. If I ever go and see it, and they're not playing the piano themselves, I will be like, "What are you doing?" You know, it was unbelievable. Just yeah,
I was really lucky and saw that production when it was on. The first time pre-COVID, so I think that was sort of my final press nights before everything stopped. And I have a weird relationship with the last 5 years because I love it. I love the music, but I also find it difficult to watch. Mm. It leaves me drained for days. I remember going to see a screening of the film and just being distraught for weeks. I just couldn't get out of bed. So it's a hard one to watch, but this production at Southwark really was a bold interpretation and they made it work so well. When Kathy is banging that gong at the back of the stage and her heart is breaking and it's so powerful and it kind of brought out new imagery and new ways to express the difficulties that these characters were going through in their relationship, told through these different back to front timelines. Yeah. And yes, oh, I'm so glad you said that because that's was on my list at one point and it's not on my list. It's not on my, didn't make it onto my final list, but I did love it. Amazing. And that production got filmed. So, I don't know if it's still being streamed or what the situation is, but hopefully that isn't the last we see of that glorious production.
I hope not.
Kaz, that was a very good top five.
Thank you. I thought so. I felt like it kind of takes you through the story of my lockdown.
Yeah, that's your year in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I feel pressure now. I'm scared.
Come on.
Okay, before I reveal my top five, it's time to share. First of all, we're going to share some listener highlights. So on Instagram at the weekend, on the West End Frame account, I asked people what their theatrical highlight of 2020 was. And I had so many different responses. I literally thought everyone was going to be like, Hamilton. And only one person wrote in with Hamilton. And I've had some more emailed in and some more DM'd to me afterwards. So I'm just going to go through a few. I've tried to select some different shows. So Anna said, my highlight was Turn Up London. That concert was incredible. And getting to see Killian smash it as Phantom just before lockdown. I agree. Turn Up London. I don't know, did you manage to catch Turn Up?
Yeah.
That was a really powerful moment as we were having this period following the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all this really difficult time, and so much awareness was being raised, you know, through that really important period where we all learned so much. And to Turn Up was a concert with a cast of amazing black performers performing incredible work, and it was also, I think, the first time we'd seen a concert in a theater during lockdown. There was no audience, but it was the first time they'd got into a building with live musicians. It was Ryan Carter, Nicole Raquel Dennis, and the team at Club 11 London. And so it was emotional to see these performers performing during this difficult but important time. And it was also emotional to see a theatre. That was a really amazing night. And also, I felt like I was in the theatre. I just remember sitting at home really like applauding, and I was with friends and had an amazing night. And yes, I'm very jealous, Anna, that you saw Killian as Phantom because I would do anything to see him. And we will, because next year when it reopens, fingers crossed, he's going to be the Phantom. So I need to try not to do a 5-minute monologue after every one of these that I read. Lauren said, on your feet UK tour, loved every minute. I know Matt Hemley will be very happy with that answer. Charlotte said, seeing Six finally after having two shows cancelled due to COVID. Six had a rough year, the driving got cancelled, and then they were then their return got cancelled and Manchester got cancelled. But yes, I got to see Six twice the other week and it killed my soul a little bit. Jordan said, I think one of our favourite shows, Come From Away. What an amazing piece of theatre. Oh, yeah. We love it, don't we?
Obs, yeah.
So seeing Mamma Mia in early Feb, pre-lockdown. I forget about the long runners sometimes, but what I would do right now for a piece of sunshine, spend an afternoon on the island with 100%. Donna. And Molly said seeing Sarah Bareilles in Waitress. Carly said 42nd Street on YouTube. Ishii said watching Aladdin in Japan for the first time with my girlfriend. Molly said Rob Fowler and Sharon Sexton's gigs and live streams. Ali said seeing Back to the Future 3 times in Manchester before COVID struck. It's a brilliant show. Can't wait to see that at Adelphi. And lovely Beth, who always sends me lovely messages, said, she said, "Oh, The Wiz on the Shows Must Go On YouTube channel. I hadn't seen it before. And in the short time it was up, I watched it 3 times and asked for the DVD for Christmas. Otherwise, watching stream concerts or Instagram lives. It's been such a hard year, but I couldn't get through it without musical soundtracks and movies. It gave me a piece of theatre escapism." Couldn't agree more.
Very well said, Beth.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
There's some great highlights, but lots more. There's so many things. I love actually the variety that came through. Just shows how much has happened and how different things has resonated with different people and how, yeah, we've all had a slice of stagey heaven in some way, hopefully. We also had some questions. Are you ready to answer some questions?
Oh, good Lord. Yeah.
Okay. So Ant said, "I really want to come to London after the pandemic, but don't have someone to travel with. Do people often go to the theatre as a single or is that more unusual? Kaz, what do you think?"
Well, you are talking to the right person, my friend. people go to the theatre on their own more than some might think, I think. Okay, so arguably, you know, the people that I know that go to the theatre on their own tend to be in some way quite embedded in the community, regular theatre goers. So, you know, not having a companion just doesn't stop you. And I think more recently, you know, when you kind of see on Twitter, the kind of uproar is a strong word, but about the lack of single seats with these new COVID configurations, there are so many people that actually not only are quite happy to go to the theatre on their own, but now have to because they live on their own. I am one of those examples. It's really, you know, it must be really frustrating for some, but, you know, people go to the theatre on their own all the time. My view is, look, I'm not going to be talking to my friends anyway during the show. If I want to go and see a show last minute, I will just book a ticket. I can't be bothered to wait for someone to say they want to come with me. People have different price points, different availability. So I think it's pretty common. And I say, go for it. You don't want to potentially miss out on something great just because you've not got anybody to go with.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And sometimes, I hope none of my friends are listening. I'm sure they're probably not. Sometimes I prefer going to the theatre on my own. I love both. I love going to theatre with friends and living it with them as well. But sometimes it's nice to just be in your own feelings and to see something and to have your own thoughts in the interval. And also I think if you're on your own, you can take in more what people around you are thinking. So I saw Six last week twice, and the second time I saw it on my own. And I really tuned in to the family in front of me who were laughing a lot. There was 2 friends sat separately behind me and they also were picking up on lots of details. And I really saw it in a fresh new way. And I don't think I would have done it if I was with other people, because I'd be more worried about what they were thinking or, you know, it's sharing my experience with them. And London's a busy place. It's like New York as well. I go to New York on my own and see lots of shows on my own. Yeah. And there's so many people, so much going on that people aren't looking at you, and there's tons of people on their own. Absolutely. Ant, go for it. Justine sent me quite a few questions. She said, "Andrew, you see so much theatre." I'm imagining Justine being quite aggressive. Justine, I'm sure you're
lovely, Justine.
"What are your tips for A, your favourite seats to choose?" Says cheese, but assume choose. "And B, the best offers and reasonable seats." Okay, let's do one thing at a time. So, Justine, tips for favourite seats. I think, okay, well, Kaz, what are your... when you're booking a show, do you splash out the most expensive ones?
You know what? No, I don't. And For me, I think it just depends on personal preference, right? I've got friends that only ever want, you know, the most expensive seats because they perceive them as being the best. If I'm going to see something that I've seen 20, 30 times, which happens a lot, I'm not going to pay 60 quid every time, and because it just doesn't make any sense. I'm not, you know, I already know it back to front. So it's just not necessary. For me, if it's a show that I haven't seen before, I usually go on Seatplan. I find that a really useful website because
I use Theatre Monkey.
Oh yes. Theatre Monkey is also a good one, but Seatplan, I'm not affiliated with either, just FYI, but Seatplan, you know, there are more users upload photos right. of their view from the right, seat. So if right. you're unsure which seat to go for, Theatre Monkey is really great because it assesses their perceived value, whether it's worth it. But if you go to Seatplan, you find the seat you want to book, somebody has been and uploaded the view. And that for me is really useful. And I give that tip to everybody who asks me that question because I get asked that quite a lot. But in terms of my personal preference, it entirely depends on the show. If I know that that particular theatre has a really high stage, I know to kind of go further back. If I know that there's no action up high, I'll happily sit at the back of the stalls, but you know, vice versa. If you're going to go see something like Phantom, I splash out because you know that you need to see right at the top. You need, you know, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but you know what I'm saying. There's a lot going on.
I'm definitely a stalls kind of person. I like to be in the stalls, and my preference is often to be near the front. I'd rather be at the front and at the side in limited view side seats. So for example, at the Apollo Victoria, Wicked, the prices have crept up in recent years, but you used to be able to get the front side tickets
£17.
It was ridiculous. It was a steal. It was amazing. It was like a really good kept secret. I would always prefer those seats than to pay £80 and sit further back in the centre. For me, those £17 ones were amazing because you could see every riff Rachel Tucker was singing up close and personal. You could see every tongue movement. It was amazing.
I agree with you, but conversely, I used to see Wicked a lot, as did so many theatre obsessives like us, and I would get those slip seats at the front because you see the emotion, you see it all up close. But on occasion I sat further back or the front of the dress circle, and you know, defying gravity is more impressive further back. So it really, you know, it's really hard to say definitively these are the best seats.
It's totally personal preference.
Yeah, it is.
But I would never, what's your, when you say you splash out to Phantom, like what's your, this is maybe a personal question. I don't like to spend over £100 on a ticket or over £80 on a ticket. If I had something, you know, good and I want to splash out a bit, you know, £65-70, I will pay.
Yeah, absolutely. And it depends again, if I know I'm going to be able to go back regularly, I just won't pay that amount of money. But you know, if I go to New York and I'm seeing something and I know it's, you know, we all know what Broadway's like, the kind of the churn of shows is much swifter than it is over here. So chances are you won't see it again. I'll pay whatever. And you have to just pay whatever over there because it's so ridiculous. You know, I think I paid 25 quid for a glass of wine when I was at Waitress in 2016, and I asked for a large wine and they charged me $25. I must have a heart attack. It was like a pint.
Oh, well, I'm sure you were happy with that. I'm sure you bought another one in the interval.
I did. Correct.
In terms of offers, it depends. If you're desperate to see something, if I'm desperate to see something, I will book in advance because I like that reassurance. But if you're willing to be a bit risky and you've got a few options, it's worth sometimes rocking up at the theatre on the day. I like to go in and play play all innocent and be like, oh, you know, I've got about a £25 budget and I just wondered if you might have anything. Actually, being on your own is such a massive advantage for doing this.
It is.
Sometimes I'll be in town doing an interview or recording with someone or maybe have dinner with someone and I'll be like, oh, I'll just pop into this theatre and see if I can bag myself. And occasionally the staff will be like, here's a seat in the centre of row F of the stalls for £20. You're like, thank you. You're like, steal. Other times, they're like, no.
Yeah, it's a bit hit and miss, isn't it? Or, you know, TodayTix is a great app.
Yeah.
For just keeping an eye on. They have deals, well, you know, they obviously haven't. Are they still rebranded as TomorrowTix? I know they rebranded, didn't they?
Yeah, they were Tomorrow Takes for a while, but maybe they were Today Takes recently because I guess...
Because there were shows.
They were selling shows, yeah.
But yeah, I think that for me is my go-to. And what I like about Today Takes is that you can also use it, you know, when you go to Broadway as well. I did that when I was over there. It's quite handy.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's a great app. Millie said, what is... This last question we'll do. Millie said, what is the one soundtrack you couldn't have gotten through 2020 without? Interestingly, on my Spotify Wrapped, I didn't have a musical theatre album on there this year. Mm. Last year, all of my top five most played songs, I think, were The Prom. I was obsessed with The Prom. I'd seen it on Broadway and I listened to that constantly. So that got me through 2019. What else have I been listening to? I've been listening to Alice Fearn's EP a lot this month, her Christmas EP. Does one spring to mind for you?
No, oddly. It definitely wasn't in my Spotify Wrapped. There wasn't that much stagey stuff, oddly. I'm just having a look now as we talk. I've listened to I've listened to quite a bit of Frozen, I guess, because it's Christmassy.
Frozen 1 or Frozen 2?
Just like that. Both, actually. Frozen 2 is my favourite. Controversial. Actually, I don't think that is that controversial.
No, I love Frozen 2. I love Frozen 2. I'm having a little nosy as well. Ooh, I mean, Chromatica doesn't count, but I feel like it's very theatrical. Oh, Moulin Rouge, I guess I listen to a lot. God, I'm so terrible at this answer.
Yeah, me too. I actually haven't listened to that much musical theatre this year compared to other years. And it's quite interesting now. It's made me think about that. Why is that the case? Is it that you need to kind of go to musical, you know, you need to see more theatre for it to kind of then stimulate wanting to listen to it? It's very odd. But yeah, for me, I haven't listened to as much as I would normally. But my standard go-tos are Come From Away.
Yeah.
Because it's just a dream. Oh, that just makes me cry even more now listening to it. Speaking of which, have you booked for the kind of concert version?
Well, I haven't booked yet, but I will. Yeah. I will. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Cassie, ready for my top five
theatrical
highlights of 2020?
Yes, make it good.
I'm scared. Well, I surprised myself a little bit whilst doing this, I have to say. I wanted to do some special mentions because, you know, I wanted to be good. I didn't want to put in shows that I've seen before. So, for example, seeing Six twice last week cured my soul. Seeing Les Mis was also an incredible moment last week. But, you know, I don't think it's fair because I've seen them so many times over the years. I also wanted to mention Turn Up, which we've discussed. I saw West Side Story at The Curve because I've been to The Curve. And that was amazing in January. And Jesus Christ Superstar, again, a production that I've seen over the years. I think that was in my top 10 last year. Seeing that at the Open Air Theatre, that was the first, you know, full-out musical I got to see post-lockdown one, and that was an amazing moment. Okay, so number five, I cannot believe, I did not think when I took my seat the other week to see this that this would be my top five shows of the year. But it is Cinderella, A Socially Distanced Ball.
Oh, the turbine. I didn't see that, but I've seen so much positivity about that.
You should try and stream it because it's been filmed and it's being streamed. You know, I love The Turbine, and this had an amazing cast and great people involved, and I was excited. And I'm not, you know, an avid adult panto fan, but this was so funny, had the most amazing bunch of performers that you would never, ever see together in an off-West End fringe venue during normal times. Everybody on that stage was exceptional. It was incredible. And it was so funny. The line about no one will wear an UGG boot to a ball just left me in pieces. I was in stitches. And it really surprised me. And I was devastated that it was only about 90 minutes and I was back waiting for my boat home. And I wanted to watch Act Two. But that was it. It was just 90 minutes straight through. It was so much fun. And it was the escapism that I needed, and it just cured my soul. And yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And I would never have thought an adult panto would be my top five of the year. So that is now available.
Adult pantos are a lot of fun.
It's now available to stream. So yes, I'm going to stream it. I can't wait to watch it again. Number four was A Very Wet Night. It was a night I went to see A Little Night Music.
Ooh.
I think Holland Park. Yes, Holland Park.
When was that?
That was also very early on. Mm. So that was same similar time with Jesus Christ Superstar. It was a Sunday. It was the show where Janie D was in it and she sung In the Pouring Rain. So I took my seat in front of Elaine Page and Angela Rippon, as one
as
does.
As you do.
And they didn't have umbrellas with them. I had what I thought was a waterproof coat with me. And then the heavens opened about 30 minutes into the show. And I thought, you know, thought maybe it would be a little shower. And no, it got heavier and heavier and heavier until half the River Thames had congregated in my left shoe. And my waterproof coat was not waterproof and I was drenched. And then Janie D, there was kind of two gazebos covering the cast, but there was a gap in the middle. And when it got to the big 11 o'clock number, Sending the Clowns, Janie D walked centre stage and then stepped forward, opened her arms, stood there in the pouring rain and delivered a wonderful, glorious, unforgettable moment of musical theatre that will stay with me forever. It was hardcore and full out. Elaine and Angela had escaped the side and Broadley was brought to them, but I stayed in my seat and I watched it like a pro. And then Marianka had to kind of help me waddle back afterwards to my car because I was a mess.
I love that drama.
That was one of the first things that I'd seen after months of seeing nothing, and it was an amazing moment. Number three is another show that I didn't think would be on this list because I saw it in person last year and enjoyed it and appreciated it, but then when I streamed it this year it had a completely different profound effect on me, and that is Amelia, which was streamed, it was the archive recording from the run at the Vaudeville last year. Did you see Amelia?
No.
So I saw it last year and thought it was really powerful and it was great, but I kind of, I guess, left and it didn't stay with me. I don't know why. It's just so, theatre's like that. Not everyone had the same response to everything. Mm. Sometimes if you saw something a week later or a day later, it'd have a different effect on you.
Yeah.
But I sat down with my housemates to watch that archive recording, which was terrible audio quality. We watched it with subtitles. And we all had this amazing experience where just the lines were so clever. The writing is so witty and funny and powerful and makes so many clever points, and was also very relevant with regards to feminism and with regards to everything happening with Black Lives Matter and racism and so many different things. It just felt really relevant, kind of made you similar like Hamilton, what stories are told and how history plays out over the years. And then that final monologue that is performed is one of the most powerful moments of theatre ever. And we were all left totally speechless in this flat. We were all silenced by it. And it really had a massive impact. And I was just shocked. I couldn't believe that I'd seen it the year before and that I'd had such a different experience. It's incredible.
That's so funny how it works. It could just be, there's so many variables, I think, when you consume theatre. It could just be, you're in a bad mood or, you know, for whatever reason, some piece of work just doesn't speak to you. And then for you, clearly, a few months on, if it takes on a whole new meaning, it suddenly becomes, you know, something that will be with you forever.
It could have been because I ate too much chicken beforehand and then sprinted down the Strand.
Not quite the profound.
I was sprinting down the Strand at 29 minutes past 7, worried that I was going to miss it. That might have had something to do with that, actually.
Oh, no.
Anyway, number two, you won't believe this, same as you, Death of England.
OMG.
And I didn't see it in person, but I saw the streaming. They streamed it for free for 24 hours online on YouTube. And again, I like similar to you, we again sat down in this flat to watch it, in a stage flat that I live in. And we all had no idea what we were watching. One of us had been told by a friend, you must watch this, and it's about to go offline in 3 hours. So it was a really last minute, unplanned thing that we watched. And wow, we were blown away. It was the impact that this show had. And sometimes I don't always love one-man shows. I always get a bit nervous watching a one-person show, because if you see it in real life, you're kind of stuck. And if you don't get into it, you're kind of stuck and there's nowhere to go. And there's nothing else to look at. There's no ensemble. This was a masterclass in how to do a one-man show, I thought. Yeah. And also, again, following everything that happened this year with Black Lives Matter, it was such a simply told, and also the writing was so clever that it made it relatable. You could almost, not relatable, but you can always imagine, you could just see how a wrong turn of events led to so much negativity, so much harm. This black man, his partner was a neighbour, he was rushing to the hospital, got stopped by the police in a tube station, and then his day took a horrendous turn, which led to lots of things spiralling in all different terrible directions. And it was heartbreaking and invoked a massive response from me. It really stayed with me. And I also thought, when I talked about it last time on this podcast, I didn't do it justice. The design was incredible. It was so simple, the way little things happened, but every single design element was outstanding, and considering it was put together so quickly, I thought that was so impressive. So yes, Death of England, Delroy was a massive highlight, and I cannot wait to see it next year when it returns to the
National. I'm so pleased it's returning. I'm so pleased.
Yeah, me too. And number one, should I give you some clue? I'll give you a clue.
Yeah.
There's a pattern here. It is also a Jason Robert Brown show.
Oh, okay. And it's one you hadn't seen before?
I had seen it before. But this was the first show, I think, that received the first digital production to receive a West End transfer.
Oh, dear Lord.
And they had one of your favourite people in it, in the West End, who was in Waitress, who played a doctor.
Oh, Songs for a New World.
Yes.
Boom. That almost made it onto my top five, because I love that song cycle so much.
Did you see the online or the Palladium or both?
I saw the online. I didn't see the Palladium, not for any particular reason. I just didn't kind of get around to booking, and you know what it's like. But no, I saw the online version. I already have seen it in person a few years prior with Cynthia Erivo, Damien Humbley, Jenna Russell, and
Dean John Wilson.
I mean, what a cast to have to see it for the first time. And I loved it.
Well, this was without doubt not only my favourite show, but the highlight of my year. That is my favourite show of the year, because the lyrics resonated so strongly. It was insane to see how relevant they felt, you know, all about what was going on in the world and what lies ahead for us and what path we're on. And Jason Robert Brown wrote this show such a long time ago, and it's still in 2020. Well, in 2020, it's stronger than ever. It's more relatable than ever. And I love the music. I hadn't really listened to it properly since I saw that production with Cynthia and Jenna and Damien and Dean. But then secondly, it was my first time being back in a West End theatre in the London Palladium. And every single person in that audience, I mean, it's quite a stagey show, isn't it? So it attracted a stagey crowd. And every single person in that theatre was so happy and excited and grateful to be there. And it was done beautifully, kind of a very simple design. And Rachel John was stood, kind of walked on stage from literally a door at the back of the stage. And you could see just her silhouette as she started to sing. And I've never felt goosebumps like it. And the audience erupted. And then as each of the cast came on, they all got huge applause. And Rachel came on riffing and growling. And David Hunter sounded amazing. And then Cedric Neil just changed my life with what he did with that score and his performance. And then new grad Shem Amari James was spectacular. He was great in that recording, but at the Palladium, he stepped up a gear. And yeah, I basically wept after that first number, so much so that I had to do an emergency mask change
because
my mask was soggy and snotty and disgusting. So I had to do that terrible thing of getting your bag out and rustling around, but there's no way I could sit there in my snot and in my tears for the rest of the show.
I enjoy that you had an emergency mask, full stop.
Oh, always. I have to do an interval mask change and then a tube mask change. I know, it gets stuffy and disgusting.
Yeah, that's true.
So yes, that was without doubt my highlight of the year.
You know, the thing about that song cycle, the only thing that I don't like about it is that my favourite track is the first one, the title track, because I love the harmonies. I love how it builds. It just gives me goosebumps every time. And then, you know, all the other songs are great, don't get me wrong, but that's my favourite. And normally, you know, you have favourites peppered throughout a show. But for me, that is the pinnacle. That's the bit that I love. And I quite often would just listen to it on repeat. The original, like the Broadway sound. There are quite a few soundtracks on Spotify that I listen to.
I love the newest one, which is Shana B and amazing people. But I would say, maybe this is controversial, but I preferred this production, the Palladium. I definitely preferred to that production at the other palace with Cynthia and Jenna. I loved that production and I enjoyed that the show, but also I think it might be the time that we're in now, but the effect that had on me back then was nothing like it had on me at the Palladium that night. Oh, it was just incredible, amazing.
Good choice. Jason Robert Brown wins for us today.
I know. It's a good day. Jason Robert Brown has literally been everywhere this year in the UK. He's had so much in the UK. And Songs for a New World, the good news is that it will return for a full month-long run at the Vaudeville Theatre in 2021. I've already booked to see it twice. I can't wait.
Amazing.
Can you believe we did it? Thank you so much for doing this, Kaz.
Thank you, my love. It's been so much fun.
You're one of my favourite co-hosts. This is so easy doing it with you. We could just chat for hours. It's just like being sat in Nando's with you, to be honest.
I know. I don't know if anyone's going to want to listen to it, but hey, we've had fun doing it.
So where, if anyone is still listening, where can they find you on social media?
At Kaz Cronin is the main place you can find me, where my tweets are mainly stagey-based. I swear quite a lot, so as long as you're not offended by that, feel free to follow. And then obviously follow Broadway World UK. Got a plug.
And the rule is, don't search you on Instagram. That's the rule. People aren't allowed to follow you on Instagram.
My Instagram is private, so you can't follow me on Instagram.
Thank you for doing this. I can't wait. Well, Nando's a podcast in 2021 and it will be gorgeous. Thank you so much for listening to the West End Frame Show in 2020. I can't believe, it's a little fact, we've released 36 episodes in I don't know if that's in lockdown or if that's just in total. I think that's in total. We've released 36 episodes. Let me do that again. I can't believe that we've released 36 episodes this year. Being in a global pandemic, I never thought that would be possible. Make sure you leave a rating if you've enjoyed it on Apple. Why am I? F***ing hell, you would never know that 36 f***ing times, would you? Make sure you subscribe. And if you've enjoyed our 36 episodes this year, please leave us a cheeky little Apple Podcast rating and review. If you're looking for something stagey to binge over Christmas, over the new year.
Oh, Lord. F*** it.
I need to eat. It's 8 o'clock. If you're looking for something stagey to binge over this strange time before New Year, you can check out our interviews podcast, In The Frame, and we always love hearing from you, so make sure you follow West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. We'll be taking a little break in January, but I'll be back in 2021 for lots more stagey catch-ups. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, everyone!
Yay!